You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Freedom is not enough. You do not wipe away the scars of centuries by saying now, you are free to go where you want and do as you desire and choose the leaders you please.
It was my birthday in 1965, June 4th, when the President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson, gave that speech at the commencement of Howard University in Washington, D.C. I wasn't much aware of it. I was a little kid back then. But neither was America much aware of the issues being put forth by President Johnson, issues that haunt us even today. Johnson's mission to address poverty and inequality in America in 1965 was well underway. He'd already sent the Voting Rights Act to Congress. The Civil Rights Act was the law of the land. Johnson's speech was drafted by then Assistant Secretary of Labor Daniel Patrick Moynihan, and it was about civil rights goals and the inequalities facing African Americans, from employment to voting to education to access to public spaces. Johnson had come to the conclusion that simply granting freedom to people was not going to eradicate long-term inequality. Listen.
For the great majority of Negro Americans, the poor, the unemployed, the uprooted, and the dispossessed, there is a much grimmer story. They still, as we meet here tonight, are another nation. Despite the court orders and the laws, despite the legislative victories and the speeches, for them, the walls are rising and the gulf is widening.
And Lyndon Johnson told that story. He presented stark statistics to support his claim that African Americans constituted another nation. Statistics drawn directly from Daniel Patrick Moynihan's report, The Negro Family, The Case for National Action, which argued that poor African American families were deteriorating in the United States. Moynihan's report created a flurry of controversy. It's continued to do so in the nearly 50 years since its publication. And our next guest has taken a close look at the history and the continued value of that Moynihan report. James T. Patterson is Ford Foundation Professor of History Emeritus at Brown University, and his book, Freedom is Not Enough, The Moynihan Report and America's Struggle Over Black Family Life from LBJ to Obama, is being released next week. And James Patterson here in the studios at WGBH in Boston. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Remind us of what Daniel Patrick Moynihan attempted to do in that report and what he laid out for Americans that is still relevant today.
Well, as you say, he was the Assistant Secretary of Labor, and pretty much on his own, he fashioned this report, finished it in March of 65, and as you say, it became the basis for the most famous of all of Johnson's civil rights speeches. What he really wanted to do was to get this in-house document. It was not scheduled for publication, didn't have his name on it, studied by Johnson and his top aides, and then they would get together and try to figure out what to do about the situation. He was very clear that he was talking only about the poorer, lower-class blacks, or Negroes as they were called then, not all black people, as he was later charged with doing. And in order to generate interest, he used a lot of very dramatic language.
There's, of course, benign neglect.
That was later.
That was later.
When he was working for Nixon. That's another whole story. This time he was a liberal Democrat. He'd been appointed to the Labor Department by Kennedy, stayed on for Johnson. And he really hoped that if the top people got together, they might figure out what to do about the problem of lower-class black families. He did not spell out a solution. He really didn't know. But he had in the back of his mind, I think, that one thing one ought to do is to have a massive jobs program for young black men. It was a kind of form of affirmative action before anything like that got its name.
And indeed, what we hear in Johnson's speech here is the idea that freedom is not enough, the title of your book, which in a sense there needs to be compensatory programs brought in to pull people up. Simply granting them freedom isn't going to work. And I'm wondering, you know, Moynihan's report seemed to have genuinely moved Lyndon Johnson in that speech. How was it translated into legislative action in the early years?
Well, what happened was the report gradually leaked over the course of the summer and started appearing in snippets in newspaper reports and so forth. at the very same time as one of the worst race riots in American history broke out. This was Watts, which broke out on 11th of August of 1965, only 5 days after the Voting Rights Act had been passed. And this really helped to radicalize an already radicalizing civil rights movement. And when people started reading or hearing about the Moynihan Report, it really wasn't in general circulation. And most people never read the whole thing. Actually, it's never been published until much later.
Do you consider it an indictment of the African-American family as it existed in 1965?
No, I do not. But a lot of black people thought it was because he talked about a tangle of pathology, which in fact was a phrase he had taken from Kenneth Clark's book, or Kenneth Clark, whom he knew, wrote a book called Dark Ghetto in early 65. So he's talking about the lower class blacks, and he thought they were in a tangle of pathology. The black people didn't like to hear the notion that they were sick, or that poor people were sick. And he came under a lot of heat from civil rights leaders who just at that very time, coincidentally, were moving well to the left and away from the nonviolent interracial civil rights struggles which had led up to Selma, which is earlier in 65, and to the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And so that he became a villain, and people said he blamed the victim. Other people blamed the victim.
Let's listen to some rhetoric from much more recently. Here's Bill Cosby speaking on an NPR program back in 2004 on the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Ed. Listen.
50 years later, in Washington, D.C., I'm looking at, in the lower economic area, a 50% dropout of the African-American male from high school. I'm looking at 65% of the incarcerated African-American male illiterate. I'm looking at 70% of teenage pregnancy as the African-American female. And I'm realizing that there's a great deal of racism. We take that. We all know that. But then again, there's a time when we have to turn around the mirror and look at ourselves.
Very controversial statements from Bill Cosby. Do you hear echoes in that rhetoric from an African-American leader, a cultural leader, exactly what Moynihan was trying to say back in 1965?
Yes, yes. He didn't say it was all the blacks' fault, but at one level he did hope that they would also help solve the problem themselves. But it was a document which aimed at what he called a case for national action, which was a subtitle of the report called The Negro Family. And he thought massive federal action would be necessary.
You know, part of what your book tells is a story of a divided nation in the sense that African-Americans and white policymakers in most cases, while they may have the best of intentions, don't work together in a partnership and deal forthrightly with the issues that are going to actually produce change. How do you see those challenges today with an African-American president, Barack Obama?
Well, Obama has spoken out about this issue a few times, and I point this out toward the end of my book. And of course, he's in the title. It talks about what the United States tried to do from Johnson to Obama. And he lectured black people more than one occasion, particularly during the 2008 campaign, pointing out that they were part of the problem and they had to help solve it. On the other hand, in his book, The Audacity of Hope, he actually cited Moynihan, so I think he really thought well of the report.
Let's listen to Barack Obama before we go.
Too many fathers are AWOL, missing from too many lives and too many homes. They've abandoned their responsibilities. They're acting like boys instead of men. And the foundations of our family have suffered because of it. You and I know this is true everywhere, but nowhere is it more true than in the African-American community.
So, as you say, the president has made these same remarks. Does anyone have credibility on these issues, lecturing to the African-American family?
Well, it's an awful lot easier to be a black messenger than a white messenger, which was part of Moynihan's problem. He was really roasted, as I said before, blaming the victim, which is he wasn't doing that at all. To repeat, the subtitle was The Case for National Action.
And the issue's still with us today. James T. Patterson is Ford Foundation Professor of History Emeritus at Brown University, the author of the book Freedom is Not Enough, which is right from a Lyndon B. Johnson speech. Freedom is Not Enough, The Moynihan Report and America's Struggle Over Black Family Life, from LBJ to Obama. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we're continuing the conversation today about the oral arguments in the Supreme Court over the Affordable Care Act. Miguel in Colorado is one of many listeners who called in support of a single-payer plan for health insurance. It seems like universal health care, Miguel says, would solve the issues raised by people both for and against Obamacare. It's not employer-based, thus it wouldn't conflict with the freedom of conscience for religious employers. Likewise, citizens wouldn't be bound by a particular employment status or health condition in order to have coverage. Finally, Miguel says, since with larger groups the cost and the risk is more spread out, it seems universal health care would afford the best deal by having the largest group possible, the entire national population. Your views at 8778-MY-TAKE. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry up here at WGBH in Boston. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science. Neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.